Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. It's time for Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott, episode 37 for October 12th, 2007. I'll take the orange box. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Audible.com. For your free audiobook, visit audible.com/Windows. It's time for Windows Semi-Annual. And with
exactly,
it just feels like that. Paul Thurrott
is back. Happy New Year, Leo.
After a couple of weeks off, we were delayed. We were delayed. In 5 years, you'll get the final version of Windows Weekly. But this, in the meantime, is the pre-beta. Paul Thurrott from the Win Supersite, Supersite for Windows at winsupersite.com, and he's the news editor for information Windows IT Pro. I don't know why I have trouble with that. Windows IT Pro magazine. Yep. And he's back from his jaunts all over the country. I know what really happened. He took 2 weeks off to play Halo 3. But that's okay. We're not going to hold it against him.
Well, I only needed one day to play Halo 3.
Oh, but, we'll get to that. Oh, okay.
Bye. Yes.
So welcome back. And there's been a lot been happening since you've been gone.
I know.
Microsoft's been very, very busy. So where did you go, just so we can catch up here?
Well, I went to Seattle.
You were the judge of that home server.
I was one of the judges. There were several people. But
how did that go?
It was great. It was really good. You know, there were three finalists, and they all won something, so nobody went away empty-handed. And I think what was really interesting about it was that the three final solutions, which, geez, that's not a good phrase.
Yes, the three winners.
Let me rework that one. The three final solutions. Okay, so the three winners all had things that were completely different. You know, so they didn't really compete with each other per se. So you could get any of these, and they were all great. And you know, it was funny because during the competition, I had a hard time figuring out how would I choose, you know, one of these things. But they gave us criteria with a point scale, and we were able to, you know, assign points for each thing. And so I sort of did it blind. I assigned all the points to each category for each one, and then I went back and added them up. And sure enough, they were all within 0.5 points of each other. So on mine, and also on the person next to me, very close. So I have a feeling that whatever the final score was, that, you know, I don't think we'll ever find that out. But I guess that they were probably very, very close because they were all excellent.
That's really neat. That's
great. So it was a good time.
So these were applications to run on Windows Home Server?
Yeah, they're add-ons that you install on the server, and then typically you access them over the web.
This is a way to publicize the fact that you can, in fact, write your own plugins for this thing, which is great.
Yeah, and that's one of the coolest thing about it. So if you have, if you're already an application developer and you're writing, you know, different kinds of applications, you want to push them over to the home server, I guess it's pretty easy. So at least I think two of the solutions that were in the, you know, in the finalists, among the finalists, were previously existing, you know, PC-based services or applications that were pretty easy to port over to Windows Home Server, you know, because of the way they did that.
So what were the three winners, just real quickly, or is there somewhere we can go quickly to find out about it?
Yeah, I'm not sure where you would go quickly to find out, but I can tell you what they were. The grand prize winner was something called WHIST, which is W-H-I-I-S-T.
No, I think we need to be able to play a LAN party whist games. I think
that's not what it is. So I'm going to have a hard time coming up with exactly what that's an acronym. It stands for Windows Home, you know, something like that. IIS is the web server and then whatever. But basically what it is a way to very easily create websites that are built off of home server that you can hit from the web. Because one of the features, you know, inside Windows Home Server itself is this ability to remotely access, you know, the server and also the other machines on your home network using a web interface and a custom URL. So you can actually create these nice, typically photo album type things, but also other kinds of web pages that you can access externally. So for example, if you're you know, creating photos of your children and your family, and you want to share them with other people in your family.
Oh,
you may not want to put them up on a public website, but you can send this private URL to people.
And it's password protected, so nobody can.
Yeah, it can be. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Or, you know, it's just a, you know, you might have an uncommon URL in your home server, whatever it is. So,
what a good idea.
Very, very. Yeah, excellent. And second place was something called Jungle Disk, which is a, front end.
I've used Jungle Disk on the Mac.
Yeah, so this is one of the ones that, yeah, has been around. So it's a front end for Amazon.com's, what's it called, S3?
S3, yeah. Their storage solution, which is very
storage
affordable.
Storage to the cloud solution, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, very
great.
Exactly. Yeah. So you set up an account on S3, and you determine what you want backed up to it, and it will add that sort of missing piece to home server, which is offsite backup. Essentially.
See, that's great. And boy, S3 is so cheap, and this would be a roll-your-own solution. What a great idea. And somebody like Francis Ford Coppola, perfect example, who had backups where they're sitting right next to the computer, and the guys broke into his house in Argentina and stole both if he'd had online backup.
That's the final insult, isn't it?
Can you
believe
that?
you take the time to backups, but yeah, you have to get them. You know, so you need some offsite. We use my parents' house. They happen to live in the same town. So if my house burns down or whatever, hopefully we'll have something.
It's funny. Steve Gibson sends discs to his mom. So parents are good for something. I'm glad to see.
Absolutely. And the third one is something called community feeds for Windows Home Server. And again, this was something that exists on the PC side previously. And this is kind of genius. What it does is it uses RSS to deliver content to your Xbox or any other Media Connect compatible device, but typically an Xbox 360. So, for example, if you go in through that Blade UI, you can go to the Media tab, and you'll see three entries there. So it's photos, music, and videos. So for, let's see if I get this straight. The way it's set up is you can use those three entries to blast content that you typically wouldn't be able to access on the Xbox 360. For example, podcasts, video podcasts, but also text RSS feeds. And what it does is it actually makes images of each each individual page of an RSS feed. It has some, it does some work in there to format it correctly. It looks like an Xbox screen. And you can sit there with your Xbox remote control and your TV set, and you can page through RSS feeds.
That's very nice.
Yeah,
read the news.
It's better looking than I'm describing it. They do a really good job to, make it look like an Xbox 360 thing, but also to make it work logically, within that interface. So I don't know that I just described that very well, but it's actually a neat thing. So
that's very cool. And who are your co-judges? Was Ed Bott was one of them, I think.
Yes. Ed Bott was one of them. Rob Enderle. I always pronounce his name.
Rob Enderle. Yeah.
We're often fingered together as the co-conspirators of the great anti-Mac cabal, but the truth is this might be the second time ever I've been in the same room with him. So,
that puts a lie to the rumor that you're the same person anyway.
Yes. So I joked with him about that, by the way. I said, us being together at Microsoft is not going to help my cause to get people not to believe these rumors.
So will we be able to download these plugins? Are they non-commercial? Are they commercial?
I believe, let me see, at least two of them are free.
That's neat.
Let me think.
I want to buy a Windows Home Server box. This is great.
Yeah. Yes.
I mean, this sounds like a much better kind of NAS, really.
Yeah. Oh, Windows Home Server is awesome. I love Windows Home Server. I'll be reviewing this soon. I'm trying to figure out how to do this because I've already installed it on a typical PC box here, and I've got USB drives attached to it and so forth. It works great. I haven't attached my custom domain and remote access stuff to it for a couple of reasons, but one of them is I really want to get one of those HP pre-built servers because they're so cool looking.
Right.
And I'll be talking to those guys tomorrow, so hopefully I'll get one of those soon. But
I'd like to get one too.
Yeah, I'll give you their contact
info. Yeah, because I'd like to. So. Well, I use it in front NAS running Linux and stuff, but it has some things. It has an iTunes server and a Windows Media Player server. But this really sounds like. Now, somebody asked me on the radio show, and I made a note to ask you, what kind of Mac compatibility? I have a heterogeneous network with Windows and Mac machines.
Right. Well, you're not going to get any of the automated stuff, obviously.
Those plugins run on a desktop client. They don't run on a. They don't run off.
Right. I mean, So you won't get that. Yeah. So you won't get the desktop agent. But not that that's particularly useful. I mean, I have not tried to manage it from a Mac. I would assume that you can hit a custom URL in a browser and just get that management.
Right.
Oh, yeah, that may not be true, actually.
As long as you have one Windows machine, though.
Yeah, you would need one Windows machine just to manage it. Although, technically speaking, you could, in fact, log into the server itself and do it from there. You can still bring up that management interface on the server. So you could do that. You would at least have that. What the server would give you on the Mac is basically what any Windows server would give you on the Mac, which is just an SMB compliant network share or so series of network share.
It acts like a NAS on the Mac side.
Basically. Yeah. So in my house, we've got my wife is on a Mac Mini still. She only uses it's not the Windows Home server, but it's actually our standard Windows, server 2003 server. She uses that for backup purposes. Mm-hmm. She hits it over SMB. Nothing special. It's just, it's going to be the same experience, but, at least you can, if you have content on there and you want to access it remotely on the Mac, obviously that would work fine.
Right.
But it's just not going to give you the front end.
Yeah. That's, that was the answer I gave. I just want to make sure I wasn't completely misguided. Yeah.
No, it's still Windows Server. So if you can, anything you can do over a network between Mac and Windows will work on Windows Server.
But the real advantage is if you're running a Windows machine, because then you can add all these add-ons, which sound really cool.
Well, you can do all the extra functionality. It does automatic backups, that kind of stuff.
And now they're selling this as soft. This just actually happened this week, I think. They're selling this now as software as well as standalone.
That's right. Right.
So
right.
I could contrary buy a shrink wrap version.
Contrary to the rumors. Yeah, well, sort of a shrink wrap version. I'm sure there's shrink wrapping involved. It's not a shrink wrap box, but this is one of those OEM versions that you would get at Newegg or, buy.com.
Got
those
it. Sites. Got it. So it's intended for an equipment manufacturer, but if you buy a screwdriver, you can also buy.
Yeah, and I don't even think they're that serious about checking what you're doing. So
okay.
It's under $200, which is actually a great deal. It works on fairly low-end hardware. They were saying early on that it was going to be 64-bit chips only, although the OS itself is 32-bit in the first version. And what they're saying now is it will work on 32-bit hardware, but a future version most certainly will be 64-bit only. So if you have any ideas about upgrading the server, don't install it on a 32-bit desktop. That said, if you have a whole PC sitting around and you're upgrading, it's not a bad way to go because it really only needs about 512 megs of RAM, a gigahertz processor, that kind of thing.
Yeah, but what you're really going to want is a lot of hard drive storage.
Lots of storage, yeah, but all you need is a USB card with a bunch of ports on it.
That's a good point. Yeah, you can just stack them.
Yeah,
I actually have a Drobo. A Drobo would probably work very well with it because I've got a terabyte Drobo. USB
drive.
That's the data robot, the USB drive where you.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
You just plug in disks. Okay. So the thing that's lacking on it, ironically, is it's not a NAS. It's a USB external drive.
Yeah. I have a bunch of drives like that. I have FireWire 800 drives that are a terabyte each, but that's all they are. So you can't.
No intelligence.
NAS you can't.
This would be perfect. You just plug it into a cheap beige box and use it that way.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, cool. I'll have to. So you can't, is anybody selling the hardware yet? I mean, I know you've seen some, but is it actually, I'm looking for it.
No. Yeah. So I'm going to be talking to HP tomorrow, like I said, and Friday, for people who are listening to this later. And I'll find out then what their plans are. It literally could be any day now. I mean, I think it's going to be within the next couple of weeks. And HP will be the big one, but I know there are a couple of others. And as far as mainstream,
you can get the software right now for. I'm looking at Newegg for $189. So
yeah,
that's a good deal. Yeah,
absolutely.
If you have an old computer, that's the thing to do.
Yeah, I mean, if you have exactly. If you have an extra computer sitting around,
which
it's
I do,
a good way to go.
Believe me, I have quite a few. Cool. Moving along, Service Pack 1, you were the first to tell the world that it would be available soon, and now we've got some updates on what it's going to include. It's really just basically a roll-up of all the hot fixes, of which there are a few in the 80s, I think, now.
sure. Service Packs have a way of not coming a moment too soon in that regard. Anyone who's installed, the first version of an OS and then had to sit through the multiple reboots,
Even if you start with Service Pack 2, I think Steve Gibson was counting it because he did it.
On XP, that's a disaster. Yeah,
it's like, but this is Service Pack 1 for Vista. I'm sorry.
This is for Vista. That. No, it's okay because it's actually true of Vista as well. Having just installed the OS yesterday.
It's like seven reboots. Noticed. You got to reboot and reboot.
It's unbelievable. Yeah.
So this, I confused myself, and I hope I didn't confuse our fine listeners. They probably are shouting at their iPod right now. We're talking about SP1 for Vista. Not SP3. Yes.
Well, but
XP.
But it's the same, you know, this is the same situation. There is an SP3 coming for Windows XP that arguably is even more overdue. And talk about a disaster with the sheer number of, you know, hot fixes since SP2.
Oh, man.
SP3 will fix that.
Do you, a lot of people have said to me, I didn't actually make this advice, but a lot of people said to me, I'm going to wait till Service Pack 1 to buy Vista.
Yeah.
Does that make sense now, looking at what's going to be in Service Pack 1? Are there significant bugs that are fixed, or is that not a big deal?
No, I don't think so. Actually, no, it doesn't make sense at all. And this is something, it's funny because they had wanted that not to be the case with Vista. Very early on, you know, they asked me, and I'm sure many others, you know, what do we have to do to get people to, you know, just go for it on the first version. And, you know, in my mind, that takes years of built up trust, you know, before something like that is possible. But now that we know what SP1 is, actually, we can say pretty definitively that, no, you don't have to wait for it. And a lot of it is just because the world has changed. We get updates through Windows Update all the time now. You know, they're updating the OS through Windows Live now, you know, with various applications that are upgrades of what's in the OS. So, you know, the Service Pack is basically just a roll-up of everything that came before it. There are other, you know, small functional changes, but nothing that dramatically alters the experience of using the OS.
So if you've been updating regularly, as of course you should have been, you won't get anything new in Service Pack 1. You won't really need it.
Well, you will get a few new things, but nothing that will make you say, oh, great, this is neat, you know.
The release version of Dream Scene, ooh.
Yeah. Well, this is, it's even actually less dramatic because, you know, this is a look at what service packs used to be like. You know, old time NT guys will look at this and say, oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Because the idea is this thing should reboot and it should not be any different. You know,
right.
Under the hood, something's going on. You know, yes, the kernel is being updated. Right. You know, yes, the search feature is being changed to accommodate Google. You know, yes, some of the security stuff is changing to accommodate security vendors. But a lot of the other stuff, you know, the performance fixes, compatibility fixes, the reliability fixes, that stuff is actually all being rolled out over time before SP1 hits. So if you just do those monthly updates that Microsoft sends out, you'll basically have most of it by the time it ships. And you'll notice over time that Vista is actually getting better. You know, in August and then again this month, they shipped a bunch of performance updates related to file copy. And I have, you know, this is actually a serious problem in Vista, especially over a network. So they just kind of fix that. You know, they're not waiting for the service pack. They don't want people to have to wait. There are companies that do wait for service packs. So for those guys who aren't interested in testing and then rolling out fixes every single month, you know, service packs are still a necessity. But I'd say for most people, you should get it, but it's not going to change your life.
Now, Service Pack 3 for Vista is supposedly going to migrate some stuff down from Vista, like the networking interface, things like
that. Some networking stuff. Yeah, exactly. Right. And by the way, the big news there, so there's a few small, you know, functional changes. Obviously, most of the XP Service Pack that's coming is just about rolling up all those fixes because it's been so long, you know, since Service Pack 2. The big news there, actually, is that Service Pack 3 has now been labeled the final Service Pack for XP. They're not releasing any Service Packs after that. So this is it, you know. So you can slipstream that sucker in and make your plans for the next version.
Burn it because it ain't changing.
Yeah, that's gonna be the end of that. The other big news that's occurring, and this is about SP2 for Vista, is that they're developing this in tandem with Windows Server 2008. So a lot of the internal components of these systems will be the same, you know, version and so forth. So, you know, a lot of the updates to the kernel and other parts of the system will be identical between Windows Server 2008 and Windows Vista Service Pack 1, such that going forward from Service Pack 1, because these things will be released concurrently as well, you know, February or sometime around that time frame, the next Service Pack for Vista, which is Service Pack 2, will also ship for Windows Server 2008. It will be the same service pack. So Service Pack 2 will actually be the first service pack for Windows Server 2008. So those systems are now going to be in lockstep again, you know, going forward.
That's, I guess, a sensible plan.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it is 1 year now almost that Vista has been out. I guess that's do you think we'll have service packs yearly? Is that kind of... why we're having a service pack now? Or
no, I asked them about that, and you know, the Windows Vista guys, it was one of the teams I met with at Microsoft about, you know, I guess it was 2 weeks ago now, I think. Yeah, 2 weeks ago. And no, they don't want to guarantee any kind of a yearly thing, because I guess from their standpoint, you know, service packs need to be tested very thoroughly. They have a certain amount of time. There's a certain, you know, amount of testers that have to look at it. It has to be deployed to a certain number of, you know, close customers. And this process just takes a long, long time. And they're feeling as if a year would just be too short, that they could not possibly ship a service pack every single year, because if they did, that's all they would be able to do. Mm-hmm. And that, and they obviously have to move on to new versions and so forth. So their basic deal is, you know, we've heard this from customers. They'd like to see one every year. But if we did that, we wouldn't be able to ship all these other updates. And we think it's more important to keep Windows updated on a steady keel through, you know, Windows Update and the other ways that they update Windows. So they can't, they're just not going to commit to anything like that.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. Well, happy birthday, Vista. Here we are. Well, it came out. I went out, this, yeah. We're talking about the, when the Gold Master shipped, and it shipped at the end of October, right?
Yeah, I think it. Well, I think it officially RTM'd in the very beginning of November, if I remember 5th correctly.
Or something, yeah.
Yeah, somewhere around there. But you know, we're getting to that time, and this is something I've been thinking about a lot lately, and the types of things I want to write around that, and not so much as a retrospective, but you know, because it's only been a year, but rather, you know, how has the equation changed? You know,
a year in, how has the equation?
Well, I mean, changed? You know. A year ago, I think there were a lot of people who were very hesitant about Vista, and it was sort of a wait and see attitude, and we'll see. So I've got some thoughts about that. But one of the ones I've gotten so much email about, and I get email about this almost every week, I would say, at least a few from people, is, you know, what about X64? Because, you know, when Vista shipped, you know, of course it came in 32-bit and 64-bit versions. And at the time I looked at that, and you know, they made some big gains. Anyone, the 6 or 7 people who used Windows XP 64-bit edition, the X64 version, know what compatibility problems can do, you know, to Windows, and yeah, how horrible that experience is when you have that one application you need, you know, Adobe Photoshop or, you know, whatever it might be, the old versions of Nero that were around a year ago that, you know, just would not run on these versions of Windows. And it's awful, because there are people that, you know, maybe need or want to run 64-bit versions for the, you know, the huge memory support and so forth. So a year ago when I reviewed Windows Vista, you know, the X64 stuff was one of the those few areas where I just sort of said, you know, this isn't, it's not good. You know, not because Microsoft didn't do a fantastic job with it, which they did, by the way. I mean, it's pretty incredible. The compatibility is very, very good across the board. But like I said, you know, when your printer or scanner doesn't work, and you know, those one or two key applications that you use every single day don't work, well, you know, at that point you just can't use it. It's not viable.
Right.
So my advice for X64 a year ago was wait and see, you know. So I just came back from those couple of trips. I decided, you know, we've got a few weeks here before the 1 year anniversary. I'm going to run X64 on my desktop, you know, and this desktop, I had installed Vista Ultimate 32-bit version, first week of December, 2006. It was the back end to my Media Center extender, the Xbox 360 in the den, up until about a month ago. And I switched that over to a second machine, in anticipation of doing this. And, you know, I thought I'd just take a look at it, see if I can run this thing day to day, you know. And, you know, it is better, but I have some issues.
In terms of compatibility.
Yeah. In fact, the compatibility is actually pretty fantastic. I just installing the OS, you know, and rebooting into the desktop for the first time, every single hardware device that is inside this box and connected to it was detected properly.
Oh, that's good.
You know, everything worked. That's amazing. You know. Anyone who, again, if you've ever struggled with the 64-bit stuff a year or two ago, that's a miracle.
Yeah, you know? No kidding. So, absolutely. Yeah.
So that's good stuff. You know, I started going through that list. You can go up to my website, or you can go to Wakupa, and you can see the list of applications I use. It's pretty transparent. I mean, I use certain things every day, and you know, you sort of enumerate through the list and you install them all. So it's like Office, you know, Photoshop, you know, whatever. And I'd have to say, you know, most of it, installed no problem. Weird issues, you know. I know that iTunes is not technically supported on the X64 version. I was able to get that working. I couldn't get the new iPods to work, like the iPod Touch and the iPhone.
Really? Interesting.
But the old style ones, like the the new versions, you know, like the iPod Classic and the iPod Shuffle. The iPod Nano, the new one. Those both work fine.
Really?
Huh. Yeah, and I don't know why. So, you know, I don't know what's going on there. And I it's the type of thing I looked around to see what was out in the world, you know, what people were experiencing. And basically the Touch and the iPhone just don't work. You know, they just refuse to work. Hmm. When Microsoft has that Windows Live Suite beta that's out now. You know, Writer, Messenger, the Toolbar, Mail. I think the family Security beta. That does not install, but doing a little bit of research, I discovered that actually it's sort of artificial that it doesn't work, and apparently it will work in the final version. And there's some hacks out there. You can actually get it to work. You actually have to go in with a hex editor, if you can believe that, and screw around with the, I know,
and that'll fix
it. And it fixes it because it's literally just doing a check, you know, on the OS version. And if you don't do that check,
that's all it is.
They all install except for the Family Security beta. That's it.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I suspect I'm going to discover more things as time goes by. But I guess
more things that don't work.
I would think so. Yeah. I mean, certainly I'm going to test. Games run fine on it, from what I can tell. I'm running. You know,
is this because software folks are now adjusting and working with X64 or? Because
it's the
same 64
side.
You installed last time. It's not a new version.
Well, no, but again, Microsoft has been updating this thing over time.
The drivers have been updated and so forth.
Yeah, the compatibility stuff has been dramatically changed over time.
And how do you get that? You'll install it, and then before it runs, it
happens automatically. Yeah. Okay. So if you, for example, last December, if I had plugged in the scanner that I have into this machine, it would not have worked. But you know, a little ping was sent back to Microsoft that said, hey, somebody tried to install this and it didn't work. But also on my machine, it knows to check for these things. So, for example, whenever that driver became available, it would have just downloaded and the scanner would have started working. Mm-hmm. Now, because I haven't been running this thing the whole time, what happened instead is I plug it in now for the first time. It says looking for drivers and it finds them and installs them. It just works.
Wow.
So the experience is actually a lot better than it was a year ago. I don't know yet if I can say, I don't think it's ready for the typical consumer yet, but it's certainly better. So, I'm not sure where we're at, you know, yet. You know, I have 4 gigabytes of RAM in my computer. So on the 32-bit version of Vista Ultimate, it said I had, you know, 3.582 gig, and now it says I have 4, you know, it sees the whole 4. So I guess I have a small memory boost or something. I don't know, but, yeah, I don't know. We'll see. This is something I just started, but I've been blogging about this, and
now people.
I'm curious with the experience, you know, other people have as well.
People want to run it because they say I have a 64-bit processor, so I want to use a 64-bit operating system.
Yeah,
is that rational? I mean, is there really a strong, compelling reason to run this?
It's like I guess you could say a 32-bit version of Vista is like a Mustang with a 4-cylinder engine, you know.
Yeah.
You want to get the big boy in there. So I don't know if it's rational. It's certainly understandable. There are some small but good reasons to run the 64-bit version. It's slightly more secure because of security features that are implemented only in the 64-bit versions. Right. It's like I said, you know, it can access more RAM. So if you do have 4 gigabytes of RAM or more, it will actually access that. And if you're doing lots of video work, lots of digital content creation type work, CAD CAM, whatever, that can be very valuable.
We should emphasize that, though. It doesn't give you more RAM. You have to buy it.
Oh, you still have to. Yeah, you still have to have
it'll it'll allow you to work with more RAM. What is the RAM footprint of the operating system? Is it the same as 32-bit Windows?
I believe it's almost exactly the same. Yeah.
So at least it doesn't use more RAM.
Yeah, it uses that exact 400 whatever meg more than, you know, that I now have or something. I don't know.
It does seem to do that, doesn't it?
That would be funny. Yeah. Especially if it was designed to do that.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But no, it doesn't.
It's snappy. It's not like it's, slugging along. I mean, I'm running, you know, modern video games on it. It runs great.
I think that's a big test. If you can run BioShock on it, And at 1900 by 1200 or whatever, and it looks good and it's running, good frame rates. I think that's a real good test. That, you know, that tells you something.
Yeah,
that's so good. So, recommendation: should people upgrade? I mean, I have both. I have 32 and 64, as most people do, right? If you get the
There's no reason to upgrade. I mean, I think in the typical lifetime of a PC, if you're already running Vista and you're running the 32-bit version, I can't imagine that that particular machine, you're ever going to want to upgrade it.
I see. For a new machine.
Yeah. I, you know, it's tough because you really can't test this without buying it first, which is what makes it difficult.
Right.
I think for typical consumers, the 32-bit is still going to be the way to go for, I don't want to say the foreseeable future, but maybe for the next year or so. But for enthusiasts, you know, gamers, you know, people who are, have any kind of high end needs that frankly don't need my advice anyway.
they know what they want. Yeah.
I mean, it is one of those things where if you're asking about it, maybe you're not ready, you know, you're probably not ready if you really don't know.
Don't do it just because it says 64 on the cover and you say, I have a 64-bit processor.
Yeah.
That's not,
I like, reason. You know, one of the advantages of Windows is that you can download anything on the internet and it works, you know. Or go to a store and buy software, and it always works. And this takes away that advantage in some ways.
Right.
And, you know, if I wanted this kind of experience, I'm not so sure I'd be running Windows. So, I don't know. You know, it's such a trade-off.
Right. Ladies and gentlemen, the Zunes are here.
The Zunes have
the new Zunes, Zune 2.0. Actually, they're not here yet, but they will be here any minute now.
Right.
You can't buy them. You don't have one yet, but they have announced them. I'm excited, and I blogged this because they finally have the word podcast in the menu. I don't know what kind of podcast support they have, but I presume that means they have something.
They do. They supposedly have very good podcast support.
Hey!
Based on the conversation I had with them. And
if you're listening to this on a Zoom now, we thank you.
And I think it's notable they're using the word podcast, by the way.
That shocked me. And I have to say, I'm glad to have been proven wrong, but I thought there's no way in a million years Microsoft would ever use the word podcast. Why not call it a Zoomcast? I mean,
a Zoomcast. Yeah.
Everybody would know what it is, but I guess they're acknowledging that that's the word. It's the one in the dictionary. That's what everybody knows. And they're saying it isn't an Apple name. It's just a podcast.
Right. It's maybe not a great name, but it's the name. So,
but it's our
good
name.
For them.
Yeah. Yeah, because I don't use the word podcast because I feel like that's just, to me, and again, this is another thing I blog, I think that's like calling your blog RSS feed a blogcast. It's an RSS feed of a show. we do shows, and one of the ways you can listen in a lot of ways, including downloading them directly or on a flash player on the website, but one of the ways you can listen is via an RSS feed. That's the podcast. But the show itself is not a podcast, it's a show. It's a show. It's a show that we use the internet to distribute. But by the way, this show is also heard on radio. It's heard on ham satellite channels. I mean, so saying it's a podcast is I think it's diminutive. On the other hand, that's what you're listening to on an iPod or a Zune is the RSS podcast version of a show. So I think that's the right terminology for a Zune, even though it's a little strange that they're using an Apple.
You seem to have spent a lot of time thinking about this.
Yes, way too much, obviously. You're right. You're right. Good. Excellent.
No, I, this is what you do.
My rationale is words are important. It's important what you call something because when people, I want us to reach the largest possible audience. So when people ask about what you do, I don't want to give them a word that confuses them or implies they have to have a iPod or a Zune.
It's, there's no simple way to say what you do, you know.
There isn't. That's the real problem.
People ask me what I do, and I tell them I'm a writer, and they get really excited. And I say, well, hold on, I write about computers. And I go,
Stephen King. We thought,
sorry about that, yeah.
You do kind of look like Stephen King.
No, thanks.
If you grow a thanks beard, a you'd be, you know.
We both like the Red Sox.
There you go. You know, New Englanders. Yes. No, it's true. I say I'm a journalist, and they say, "Where can we read your work?" And I say, "You can't." And
then it's not that kind of joke.
And then they feel very sorry for me.
Exactly. Right.
I say, "No, I have millions and millions of listeners. It's just not in a magazine or a book." So anyway, what else is new besides? So did they tell you how? Actually, I'm sorry. I have to continue on with this because I've got to know how is podcast support integrated into the Zune? Is it now part of the Zune desktop?
Yes. So everything's new. Everything old is new again. everything has been completely redone.
This is the final solution.
This is the other final solution.
I'm sorry.
I'm so uncomfortable with that.
I'm sorry. Okay. I sidetracked you.
Everything's new. So there's new hardware, although they're continuing the old hardware along and updating it. So all the new software features that are coming out will work.
Everything.
On the old device. Yeah.
Everything will be updated.
As long as it's software. There are a couple of new, you know, hardware features that are unique to the to the new devices, right? So there are two new form factors and then three new models. So two of them are flash storage devices. They're sort of nano-esque.
Yeah.
I'd say they're closer in form factor to the old nano than to the new one. They're not chubby looking, or they're tall and thin. 4 and 8 gigabytes. Of RAM, and then there's a bigger. It's not as thick or as brick like as the old Zune 30, but there's an 80 gigabyte Zune that's new to this year as well. The hardware support, the software support across all three is almost completely identical, which is in sharp contrast to the iPod line, by the way. And I actually really like that because you can just look and say, well, I need this much storage, or I want a bigger screen because I want to watch movies, and it makes the decision very simple. Whereas, I think with the iPod line, it's matured to the point now where there's so many different devices and they have overlapping functionality, and some do this and some do that. And it actually makes it a little harder, to pick one in some ways, So I think that's the simplicity of that on the Microsoft side is probably a good move,
So I should run out and buy one of these.
Well, you should run out and ask them to give you one. I'm pretty sure they. I thought they were going to talk about it.
Yeah, I don't ask people for anything. I just go out and buy it. I'm made of money.
I actually buy lots of stuff, and I'm not made of money. So
I make that my editorial policy, and I dedicate a certain amount of money each year towards buying crap.
Oh no! This is a conversation I have to reintroduce with my wife every
why are
2 weeks
buying
or so.
Another Xbox?
What's with the HDTV in your office again?
It's for work.
It's for Halo.
It's my job.
I really like it.
Isn't it funny? It's a great job to have where you can actually literally say, oh yeah, I bought an HDTV for my office so I can play games.
Yeah.
I mean, thank God we can say that.
It's tough. Our friends, teenagers will come over and I have iPods all over my office and they're always like, oh, can I have an iPod?
Yeah.
Can I have an iPod?
No, you can't.
And that's not how it works.
Do I look like Kris Kringle to you?
I don't come to your school and take your rulers.
There you go. That's a good one.
The iPods are for me.
So I probably will get. Now, is the functionality different on the flash and the hard drive ones, or is it just capacity?
Just capacity.
Their sizes. The screen size is different.
And screen size. And one small difference, the flash units don't support TV out.
That's interesting. Apple pulled back on that.
Yeah. In what way? What do you mean?
Well, the iPods used to have TV out, and the new Nanos, I believe, do not.
I think they do.
Oh, you have to buy the special doohickey.
Here's my understanding of that. I just tested these, now I forget. I have the old component cables for the iPod. And if I remember correctly, and I could be wrong about this, but I think that the Classic and Nano both work fine with those cables, but that the iPhone and the iPod Touch do not.
The new ones don't. Okay.
I think.
I could look this up real quickly because they did change the video out on the iPods, and
My memory is horrible, so I could be wrong about that. But at least one of the new iPods works with the old cables TV out.
Yeah.
I'm positive it's not the Touch or the iPhone.
Yeah, they put a chip in those, I believe.
Yeah, and you need the new cables, which aren't out yet, if I'm not mistaken. But
so the baby Zunes don't have video out.
Right. Other than that, everything's the same.
How's it? I want to ask you, how's the video look on that little screen? And I can't.
I don't.
Because nobody knows.
So there's some differences this time around. The screen is still 320 by 240. It will, however, work with the same sort of video formats that the iPod does. So, in the past, if you wanted to get a video down onto the Zune, you'd have to transcode it down to the small size.
That's excellent. Dude.
Now you can go with a 640 by whatever video works fine.
Yeah.
That's just very logical. There's a new kind of I forget what they call it, but the scroll wheel type of thing is actually a scroll wheel now. It's not just a four-way button. So you can actually flick through it and move through lists very quickly, apparently. It's not like a spinning type thing like on the
old
iPods.
Yeah, no, but it's better than the button that didn't do anything.
Yeah, it's supposed to work great. Again, this is just based on their, just, you know, their description. I don't have
Microsoft says it works great.
And listen, when have they ever really exaggerated anything? So
there's starting to be a Zune ecosystem. You're starting to see accessories. Yeah. Yeah. I think that bodes very well, frankly.
I blogged about this the other day or the other week. I don't remember anymore. But, you know, I really believe that that Apple is hitting that point that Microsoft's at with the OS space, which is there is a significant portion of the population now who, frankly, is a little tired of them, you know. And I don't know if it's just the iPhone stuff where people feel like they got screwed over a little bit or.
Now, Steve,
you know,
the bloom is off the rose. Jobs is no longer the golden boy he was, I think.
Well, listen, super successful, more successful than ever. But, you know, let's face it, that's kind of what we do in this country. We tear them down when they
nobody
get
loves
successful.
A winner. That's right. We love the underdog.
Exactly. So, So, you know, suddenly the Zune and other products will look a little more interesting to people, not to mention the fact that obviously they're getting better. So, you know, we'll see. I'm going to I need to withhold any opinion to that note, you know, until I have them and can test them and so forth. But some interesting things, you know, they're going to do actual wireless sync, you know,
which is very cool.
It will just work automatically and silently. It requires a power connection, so it doesn't do anything stupid like try to sync while you're just walking around with it. And that protects the battery, and that makes a lot of sense. So you could just dock the thing over in the corner of your room or attached to your TV where you may be using it in that fashion. And
there's a good use for it.
Sync overnight, whatever. That's now, nice.
And I think the compelling difference between the Zune and the iPods is the Zune store, which is you have a subscription model. And that's something that they've never done on iTunes.
Optional
subscription model, which they've never done on iTunes.
So
this
time
that was pretty cool.
Yeah, subscription services have never taken off in a huge way. I think part of the reason is the cost. They've always been a bit too expensive. That's not going to change with this, unfortunately. You know, part of it is just the wrong people are doing it. You know, I think if Apple had done it, it would have been very successful because they would have done it right. I think that what Microsoft's doing this time is, A, they're changing everything, like I said. So the PC software, brand new from the ground up. It's not a Frankenstein monster like it is now based on Windows Media Player. It's a brand new software, not based on anything.
Before it looked like it was based on Urge. I mean, it really just looked like the Urge.
That's exactly what the store was based on, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
So the actual PC software is brand new. The new Zune Marketplace, which is the online store, completely new. There's a new community site for helping people discover what other people are listening to and so forth. All of this stuff written from the ground up. The hardware platform for the player is completely new from the ground up. It's not based on some Toshiba Gigabyte like the last version.
Oh, really?
Everything's new.
Oh, wow.
So this
is the Zune they probably wanted to release.
Yeah, yeah. So the UI in the software and in the new marketplace is absolutely gorgeous. I mean, really, really nice looking. And I think this is going to be a huge differentiator with Apple because, you know, as nice as some of the stuff they've added over the past couple of years, is, let's face it. I mean, iTunes is a spreadsheet, you know, with music in it.
Right.
I mean, that's what the thing is. It's you know, it's basically text lists and so forth. And they're really, really going graphical with the Zune stuff, and it's really nice looking. You know, we'll see. They're not adding a lot of content to the site past music. They are going to add music videos. They're going to do TV shows later, not in November when they launch the products, but later because basically they're trying to hammer out a deal with the companies that sell that content because they want to do a different kind of model, probably a subscription model is my guess. For that, so that you know, the notion of spending $2 on a show that you sort of buy, and I say buy with air quotes around it, is kind of silly because you're only going to watch it once.
Exactly.
Usually,
it's not like
and
music.
Why,
yeah,
yeah. Why do you want this thing sitting around? And my guess is they're going subscription. But as far as the store goes, the big news in some ways is that there 1 million of the 3 million songs they'll have at launch are going to be pure MP3s, no DRM. But in sharp contrast with places like Amazon and Walmart, not only will they not have DRM, but they won't have any kind of watermarking or any kind of tracking. They're just pure MP3s. And that is actually a huge development. You know, I mean, so
I love the Amazon Music Store. I think it's the best thing ever.
Huh.
You disagree.
I'm sorry. My son just walked by my office with a huge box.
Your new Zoom is here.
No, I don't think that. Someone must have dropped off a package. Anyway.
I have to wonder. The one thing that bugs me about the Zoom pricing is that the flash 8 gig is $200.
Yep.
The 30 gig hard drive is $200.
Yeah.
I don't understand that.
Well, I think it's the old-fashioned model for one thing. You know, if you look at the flash and the new hard drive model, the pricing I believe is identical to the similar iPod products.
Yes,
I think.
Well,
no.
I guess. I mean, I think so. The 8 gig nano is $200, and $150 for the 4 gig nano. So that's identical.
Those are the same. And then the 80 gig iPod is,
I don't know,
$250, isn't it?
Is it that cheap? Jeez, I just bought it for $350.
Well, there's a $160 now, so you might have bought
I bought an $80. No, not just before the announcement. Just.
Okay.
The usual just for me, which is I paid.
You fool.
The foolish just. let me look. Okay, the classic is $250. You're right. Not $250. It's a little more expensive. So there, at least Apple says, for a $50 premium, you can get an 80 gig.
I think what Microsoft should have done, frankly, is undercut Apple across the board.
Yeah, $50 less for the flash.
They're going to get soaked in this anyway. I mean, you might as well build up the user base. But, you know, I obviously don't run the company, so whatever. My advice falls on deaf ears. But
the unprotected music for the Zune is also on the Zune store, or is that?
Yes. Yep.
And so that's basically companies like Universal and EMI that did that wouldn't do the deal with Apple for iTunes and did do the deal with Amazon is also going to offer that on the Zune store.
Exactly. But Microsoft was able to, get an agreement that these tracks will not be trackable in any way. There's going to be no watermark.
Oh, interesting. And it will also be WMA, obviously, instead of MP3.
No, it's MP3.
You said MP3, so it is MP3.
Yep. Yeah, that's what's amazing about it. Yeah.
256 kilobit MP3. Mm-hmm. So basically, it's the same stuff that you're buying on Amazon, except that Amazon has the watermark in it.
Right. Yep.
Well, that's compelling.
Yeah, I mean, it is compelling because even if you never use one of their devices, you can still get the software. That's a great way to buy music. So, that's what I want. I mean, that's perfect. So that looks good to me. I mean, that stuff I think is neat. They're also doing, I think they've done some nice, or given a nice nod, I think, to the people who did buy into the Zune before, because all the new accessories work on the old device. All the old accessories work on the new devices, so back and forth.
Yeah.
All the new software features will be added to that old device. All the new, the new PC software, the new Zune marketplace, and the new community site will all work with the old device. So if you did buy into one of these things, you're not being left out in the cold. I think that's cool.
Well, this is one of those situations where in order to compete against Apple, you have to do everything
You got to do the right thing, Well, I mean, contrast this to Apple's, the silliness with the iPod games.
Yes.
So I bought 5 iPod games for fifth generation.
They don't work.
iPod, and now they don't work. Not only can I not put them on my Classic, I can't. I have to buy new versions of the ones that are available.
Yeah, see, I can understand if they'd say, well, look, it's new hardware. It's not going to work, but here's a free upgrade. But
exactly.
To make you buy it again is kind of...
Gonna buy it again. That's just not right. No, so whatever. Yes, Microsoft's the underdog here. So they're doing the right thing for whatever reason. It doesn't matter. It benefits anyone who buys these things. It's good. So we'll see.
Will you buy pink or brown or red, white or black?
Well, there's no brown actually this time. That's the other thing.
Brown.
Yeah, the brown's gone.
What can't brown do for you?
Apparently, it can't move forward in time.
Now, when we talked about this in Twitter, I think we kind of misstated the case. Jay Allard had moved into an operational role at Zune after the departure of...
Now you're confusing me.
Of months ago. Allard got more involved, and now he's back upstairs. They've actually hired somebody to run the Zune division.
They've hired somebody to run the Zune, like the business end of the Zune.
Business, yes. Jay was doing that for a little while, but that wasn't his main job. He's there as the genius.
Yeah, he's
the creative guy.
Quite a genius, that guy. So he's never been unsuccessful. That's all I'm saying.
And that's not all you're saying, but that's all you're saying out loud.
All I'm going to say.
That's all you're going to say.
If you can point me to anything he's done that's successful, I'd like to hear about it. But well,
he
you know,
did
whatever.
Xbox 360.
Right. So how well is that done exactly?
I don't know. I'm happy about Halo.
I mean, I love it. I'm just saying, you know, the Nintendo Wii is about to outsell it, yeah. and it's been on the market for a year less.
You still can't get the Wii in a lot of places.
Just going to throw that one out there.
Yeah, you're right. I do love my Xbox 360. I don't care if the HD drive is loud. And if it gets the rings of death for people, it's still... And you played Halo 3, and it didn't ring out on you.
I know.
Yay!
That was my biggest victory. I was able to work.
This is how nutty this guy is. He flies his Xbox with him so he can keep playing.
Oh, no. I didn't have to fly the Xbox. Oh, although I did bring it to France like an idiot. I don't remember the day anymore. It was like some Tuesday. It came out a couple weeks ago.
September 25th, the day we shall never forget.
Right. It's odd that I can't remember that. And I had foolishly agreed to be in this Windows Home Server event, which was scheduled for the next day.
Unbelievable.
So I had to fly the day that Halo 3 was released. So what I did was I waited up until midnight. I drove out to the Best Buy, stood in line with a bunch of really geeky guys, which was surreal. And, bought the game. I came and we all have different styles of doing things, but when I travel, I typically pack that day. I don't really think about it in advance.
Sense. Anybody who travels a lot, that's how they do it.
This time though, knowing that Halo was going to be out, I actually packed a day in advance. So I never do that, but I just wanted to point that out. I got home at about 12:30 or so.
I want to meet Mrs. Therott someday.
you haven't met? Oh, no, I guess
I've never met you, Paul. We've never been in the same room together.
No, we have. We met at the...
Right. At the Windows launch, the Vista launch, right, where the WoW started.
At the WoW start, yeah.
That's right. Oh, I have met you.
You come out to Providence a lot.
I'll be out there. I'm going out to New Haven in a few weeks.
Okay.
A few weeks.
Well, we should figure that out.
Yeah.
I stayed up until 4:30 in the morning playing the game, went to bed.
What?
I left a note.
4:30? That's not even the morning. That's the next day. You stayed up all night, dude.
4 hours. So I left a note. Make sure the kids wake me up when they go to school.
Because I got a plane to catch.
I ate breakfast.
And you played some
and
more.
And then I played Halo until my wife drove me to the airport. But here's the thing that kills me about this.
Oh, my God.
It's at some point around noon, I realized I could finish this game right now.
Wow.
I could do this. And then I got stuck on the second to last level in this game is so hard. It was so frustrating. I knew I was going to leave without getting it done.
That's
so
terrible.
By the time I left, I only had one level to complete the final level, the final mission. So I took the game with me. I flew.
But how do you get your saved game?
I brought the hard drive with me. Right. Sorry, okay. I should explain that. I brought my hard drive from the Xbox and the game, and I flew out to Seattle. My friend Joe picked me up, drove back to his house, turned on his Xbox, and I played Halo until I finished it. And it actually only took me about another hour. So I finished the game. And so I did this within 24 hours, and I flew cross-country in the middle of it.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
I've been told that the levels are kind of inconsistent. There's some very hard ones early on.
One of the levels you can finish in 15 minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, not only the difficulty of the levels is inconsistent. The length of the levels is inconsistent. Frankly, the quality of the levels is also inconsistent. But I was in a complete coma for the rest of the week. God knows what I did in that some server thing. Someone should really reevaluate that. But yeah, it was unbelievable.
So, another person, no spoilers here, and I haven't finished the game. I've only gotten actually halfway through the first level.
Okay.
And to me, it's really, it's not about the same.
I should tell you, I am playing it again on Legendary, which is the hardest one.
Wow.
And I've finished 6 of the 9 missions.
Wow.
And I'm not looking forward, though, to that second to last one. That's level really 8. I know it's going to be horrific. But you can do anyway. I'm sorry.
To me, the single player is not the reason for Halo. It's the multiplayer experience.
No, it's not. Well, but you know, there's two things going on with multiplayer this time around, which I think are really interesting. One, obviously, is just classic multiplayer and all the good stuff that's going on there. That is what has made Halo popular all these years.
Oh, yeah.
But they're also allowing up to 4 people to play co-op over Xbox Live, which is a great way to do Legendary
Oh yeah,
because you can have three of your buddies come online with you.
What fun that would be!
And like, yeah, so I haven't done that yet, but I've done it locally with my son, who's actually, if you ever see, by the way, my son, you know, is 9 years old, right?
Yeah.
If you ever see me online playing it online,
it's him.
It's him, and he has gotten a bunch of achievements.
So all these achievements I'm seeing, that's not just you.
Yeah. So sometimes like people will get beaten by me, they think, and it's a 9 year old kid.
Don't tell anybody.
It's okay. I don't really plan to play it a lot online.
I'm really good, man.
He's really good. Yeah, sort of. He's actually a 9 year old. yeah. So he's. I just told him you can do whatever you want online.
That's great. Yeah. Now you. What is your handle on Xbox Live? If people.
It's my name. It's Paul Theriot.
Just Paul Theriot. Okay.
Yeah.
And you currently have 14,901 points.
Yeah. 901?
Yeah. I don't know where the one comes from.
The stray 1 point.
There's a one in there.
So 900 and what did you say? 81?
14,901.
901. So, okay. Yeah. So I'll be 15,000.
And you're a 5-star man. You got 5 stars. And you,
yeah.
And
well, that's not.
There's a little Half-Life, Half-Life achievement snuck in there. Little orange box, huh?
That's right.
That's what I love about. I have to say, it's really fun. Yeah, see, I don't think that you played Transformers the game online.
No, I didn't.
No,
that's my son.
Yeah, Marble Blast Ultra. I don't think Paul Theriot's playing that.
Marble Blast Ultra is always my son. I had someone wrote me about Marble Blast Ultra. They're like, oh, I saw you on, you know, playing Marble Blast. I'm like, not exactly.
No, that wasn't
not exactly. Me.
Now, for some reason, your most recent Halo 3 achievement is just a red dot.
Yeah, that's the.
That's at level 9?
No. We've gotten a couple of... I think it's a multiplayer one. It's,
okay.
Yeah, so, no, once you finish it on Legendary, you get credit for finishing it on that skill level and then also on Heroic. So it's like 250 points immediately.
Holy. So somebody told me that it's a little disappointing, the end.
Oh, it's more than a little disappointing. So it's not a cliffhanger. I'm not going to ruin it.
Yeah, but, no spoilers here.
But it gives you the same, like, huh? Actually, you know what it's like if you finish BioShock?
Yeah.
It's sort of unclear what happens at the end because there's a really quick video. So it's like, this is what happened. Really quick. And you're like, what? Huh? What? And you can't watch it again. And you're like, what was that? And at the end of Halo 3, there's this video. And you're like, wait, what? Did that happen? I mean, it's so confusing.
They ran out of room on the DVD, and so they can only put a little.
It's a lot like that. I mean, I guess the Halo 2 ending was them literally running out of time,
right?
So I guess that wouldn't surprise me. But it is disappointing. And you know, the game itself is the single player is decent. It's not fantastic. It's the graphics are not great. They're not even HD.
That's a little disappointing. I thought the graphics would be much better than they were.
What's really bad about it is they have these cutscenes, which are fine. You know, they're nice looking, but then it goes to the game and the quality degrades.
Yeah.
I mean, right in front of your eyes.
You get all these jaggies.
Yeah. Between the cutscenes. And usually in modern games, the cutscenes are rendered in exactly the same graphics engine that the game uses. So that, you know, the interplay between the cutscenes and the game are very seamless. And in Halo 3, that's not the case.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So are you disappointed?
Well, you know, I'm playing it again. I mean, I play Halo with the guys up the street about once a month, and we will be playing this game for years to come. So
that's the thing. I mean, that's the long, it's a 10-hour game or 20 for your 24-hour game, but the multiplayer is the real rationale.
Arguably I would have been more disappointed if I hadn't, you know, if it had taken me a week to finish it, you know, I guess.
And then had the lousy ending.
Yeah, so it was okay. It's okay. I think
did they leave room for a Halo 4, or is it over?
Well, you see, I don't want to give away the ending.
Spoil
so
it. No, don't spoil it.
I will. All I'll say is that there will be a Halo 4, and that's not made obvious in the game. It's made obvious by what Bungie has said.
Press releases.
Yeah,
and even though Bungie is now spun off from Microsoft, but Microsoft does have the right to buy anything Bungie does. So.
I guess they're going to be 360 exclusive for a while.
That's great. I think the 360. I like the 360 as a platform. Yeah. I know you say it's a failure, but I have to say I like.
It's not a failure, but it, you know, it has not even sold as well in Japan as the previous version, which wasn't exactly going gangbusters there.
Microsoft. I'm starting to feel sorry for them.
You know, 11 million users in 2 years is not dramatic.
No, it just isn't. You're right. When you look at the levels that PS2 and
Yeah. I want it to do better than it's doing. Don't get me wrong. I'm not criticizing. Well, I am criticizing it, but I mean, I love the thing. I wish it was doing better,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No, it's my favorite game machine ever. And I have a PS3 yeah. now. And yeah. I mean, when maybe, you know, I'll tell you, when Metal Gear Solid comes out on the PS3, I might.
Yeah. I might, I'm actually going to pick up a Wii game just to play it. It's that, the new Metroid game.
Metroid Prime. Yeah.
Looks fantastic. Yeah, you know, and I don't really like that. Wii, but you know, I'll go over there if there's a good game. So.
You're finally got around to your Digital Media Core series on the Supersite blog, and I want to make sure everybody knows about that.
Well, I want people to sort of look at this and give me some feedback, because what I want to do is give advice that will be updated on an ongoing basis about, you know, media formats and tools to use and so forth. So, you know, for example, if you want to rip your CD collection to your hard drive, what's the best format to use, which is the only article that's actually up right now. And, you know, I just think that, you know, MP3 is the one true audio format, and there are valid reasons that people use other formats and so on, but you know, it doesn't matter, because when it comes to compatibility, which I think is the most important thing now and in the future, the foreseeable future, you know, MP3 is the way to go. So that's a very easy one to say. You know, so it's sort of like saying JPEG is the one you want to use for photos. You don't really have a choice. That's right. The format.
When you get to video, though, boy, it all goes squirrely.
Video is very complex, and I have written and rewritten and rewritten the video one, and it's not up yet because it's just really difficult. And I have personally decided that H.264 is the way I want to go going forward. But when you decide on something like that, you're cutting off some of the stuff you can do, because, you know, H.264 doesn't work with Media Center. It doesn't work with Windows Media Player. It doesn't work with a lot of digital media receivers.
Right.
So what are you going to do? You need to figure that stuff out. So that's what I want to write about. So I just want people to kind of check that out and give me some feedback if they can, because, you know, I'll be rolling this stuff out over the next few weeks.
Now, this is not on your Internet Nexus blog. This is on your Win Supersite blog. So
right. It's on the Supersite, just the Supersite itself.
But you are doing a Win Supersite blog now.
Yeah, and I've been blogging about the blog is interesting because it gives me a place to comment about stories I wouldn't write in a full form. I can just point people to stuff. I can also sort of preview stuff that I'm going to be doing on the Supersite. So it gives me a chance to say, hey, I'm working on this digital media core thing. Right. What do you think about this?
It's kind of behind the scenes.
Yeah. I posted some cool stuff. I took some photos at the Microsoft company store. I was over a guy's house who works for Microsoft. He had all this cool, you know, Vista swag, and I think people like to see that stuff. So, it's just a place for me to throw that stuff. So
just the wow. We just love the wow.
It is the wow. Yeah, it is the wow.
It's the wow blog. Go there
it's
for
like,
the wow.
This guy. Wow, he has no life. That
wow.
guy. So sad.
Wow. So if you go right to the front page of the Supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com, you'll see a big green Digital Media Core button, and that's where you can go to these articles on music, photos, video, backup, sharing. I think this is a great idea. Great idea. It's much needed, and I will actually send people there from the radio show because...
Okay.
I'm completely in agreement with you on both your music and video.
The reason to do this is because I get so much email about it.
Right.
You know?
What should I choose? You know, what bit rate should I use?
What do I do?
Excellent.
Yeah. And that's why people will give me feedback and I can change things too. So, I write something about MP3 encoding and I get enough emails from people say, no, you need to do this instead. I can test it and say, yep, you're right.
We're Let's all helping fixed. Each other together.
Yeah.
That's the magic of the internet.
It's the wow.
It's the wow. That's the real wow.
Of the internet.
Yeah. The real wow. So let's get to, first we're going to do our book pick, and then we're going to do our software pick. It's pick time. And and actually, Paul, you have a book pick. We want to thank the folks at audible.com, by the way, for sponsoring our podcast and all of the Twit podcasts. They're really, they've been a great supporter of the Twit podcast and of Windows Weekly. If you would like to sign up for audible.com, and I think you would, if you listen to, you're already listening to audio content, you've already kind of got that's kind of the hump you have to get over, is to kind of listening to and understanding audio content. Once you're doing that, you've got to expose yourself to books. It's a great way to get a lot of reading done in your downtime, whether you're at the gym, in the car. I listen while I'm walking to work. It's fantastic. All you got to do is go to audible.com, audible.com/windows. And you too can get a credit to a free book and listen to, well, there's so many great books. I want to actually give Paul a chance to pick his book. This is something you're listening to right now?
Yeah. Yeah. It's Stephen Colbert, the former Daily Show correspondent. He now has his own show.
Colbert Report,
which is hilarious. Yeah. So he has a new book. And now I've not seen the book yet. My understanding is that the book just came out this week, the print version. Mm-hmm. But my understanding about the books is that the audiobook and the book are actually very different.
Oh, really? Yeah, because I've only heard the audiobook. It came out before the print came out.
That's right. So it came out, I want to say, last week. Yep. And it's called I'm America and So Can You.
Just the name makes you laugh.
Hopefully the tortured grammar of the title will make you realize it's funny. Classic. He's just absolutely classic. Yeah. So
highly recommend. I'm still in the middle of it. I haven't listened to it. In fact, I save it because it's so funny. I just want to listen to one section at a time.
I told you, I think I was in Paris listening to one of those Douglas Adams audiobooks and laughing out loud in the subway and getting very strange looks.
As Americans.
And I can only imagine with this book, it would be so much worse because
it's very funny.
It is laugh out loud.
I did. I definitely laughed my way through the Stairmaster yesterday.
So it's absolutely excellent. So
excellent. Good pick. Our pick of the week from Stephen Colbert, and he reads it too, is I Am America and So Can You. And if you want to get this book or any book absolutely free, go to audible.com/windows. And we do thank Audible for their support of the Windows Weekly podcast. Let me see. I think we want to do our software picks. And can I start? And you probably know about this. And then I'll let you do your really good one.
Sure.
Because I'm not really the guy for this. But every once in a while, I come across something.
I'm not sure that's true, but
this came to me from a guy named J.C. Hallgren, who is a regular in our chat room. He's J5 in our radio show chat room. But he also does a blog for a shareware program that he says is just one of the greatest programs he's ever used. And I downloaded it, and I'm blown away by it. You probably know about it. It works on Vista, works on XP. I think it even works on earlier versions of Windows. It's an Explorer replacement called XYplorer by a German fellow named Donald Lasso. Huh. You've never heard of it?
Well, no, actually, it sounds familiar. It's really cool.
Now, I'm not normally, I'll tell you where I really find this useful is in Vista. It's XYPLORER.com. You could try it free for 30 days. The single user license is $25. With Vista, it's driving me crazy. I keep all the podcasts in folders, right, as I'm working on them. And Vista says, oh, those are MP3 files and will only display MP3 related information in the detailed list.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Not the stuff I need, which is they created.
By the way, it's bad enough that it does that, but I enjoy when it does that and there are no MP3 files in the folder.
It's too damn smart.
That's good stuff. Yeah, that never gets old. Yeah.
They changed Explorer in some significant ways. I used to be able to, for instance, do all of our tagging in the properties of Explorer. You can't do that anymore.
Right.
So there's just a few things that, and these are minor, I admit, and they're probably even fixable. I'm sure you can dig into the settings and make it not do this. But it's just driving me crazy. So this is just, it's a program. A couple of nice things about it. One is it runs standalone. There's no installation, which means you can put it on a USB key and carry it with you. It's one of those kinds of programs. It's not a new shell, so don't worry about that. It's more like, going back to the, Norton Commander or something like that, where you have your own interface to explore files. But it allows me, it's tabbed, and it will save your tabs, which is very handy. So I have the tabs for the podcast folders. It gives me the information I want, like when it was created and modified. And I can change all of that. Has some very powerful find features. I'm not sure if it's hooking into Vista's Find. I suspect not. It's very fast. It's not as fast as the Vista Find. I find this very useful, little program. And I do thank JC for sending this on to me. He runs a blog about it. He likes the product so much. xyplorer.blogspot.com. There's a wiki as well, and this shows you that when you see these kinds of fan support, it tells you it's the kind of program that answers some needs for some people, and it sure is making my life a lot easier. There's a lot to it. On the surface, very simple. xyplorer.com.
I can tell you that it works on the x64 version of Vista.
That's a good, you know, that's a really good sign. You don't need to install it and it just runs. Yeah, I like that. That means somebody who knows what they're doing wrote this software. The tabbing by itself is great, but there's a lot more to it. So you already downloaded it.
Yeah, actually, I would say that one of the things I like about it immediately, aside from just the performance, is that if you've installed things that lock into the shell, like WinRAR.
Oh, yeah,
it actually sees them and works with them, which is ideal, because otherwise might be one of those things where you say, well, this looks good, but I can't really use it because it doesn't do this.
The right click is fully functional. So, for instance, I use MP3 tag to do my MP3 tags. It's right there. I can click on it, add to Windows Media Player, all that.
It's nice.
Yeah, and there's some really neat things. For instance, there's a move. This is a really useful backup tool because you can move, file, and append a date. Little things like that, copy here with suffix date. And you can not only have the suffix date be the current date, you could have the suffix date be the date modified.
If you could just copy files with this thing, it's already better than Windows.
It's got a very extensive copy feature. You know, take a look, 30-day trial. You know, it's probably not for everybody. But if you're a power user, especially if you've moved to Vista and there's little things that you just miss.
It has a power user feel to it, but it's nice.
Yeah,
I like it.
And we know what Paul's pick is because he's it's right there on your Windows Xbox Live tag.
Yeah. Well, so I apologize for my pick this week because typically what I want to do is focus on things that are free, you know, utilities or inexpensive utilities that you know will improve your life in some way, but this one is just awesome, and it's the Orange
Box. Far from free.
It's far from free. it's called the Orange Box, which is probably the worst name in product history. What it is a combination of Half-Life 2, which is the greatest video game ever created, in my opinion. Also, the two sequels they've made so far to Half-Life 2, Episode 1 and Episode 2. Episode 2, which is brand new to this box. Something called Team Fortress 2, which is an online deathmatch game, and
a great game.
That looks awesome.
You've never played it? Oh, so much fun.
No, I'm not a big Team Fortress guy, but I will try. So, but what's fascinating about this to me, I mean, just the release of Half-Life 2 Episode 2 to me is huge news. I mean, I'm longtime Half-Life 2 fan.
So this is the first time it's been available on Xbox.
Yeah, so it's available on Windows and on the Xbox 360, but this is the first time any of these games have been made available on the 360.
That's
so
exciting.
Big news, you know. So it's expensive. You know, it's $50 on the PC and $60 on the Xbox.
Well, wait a minute, that's not that bad. You're getting how many games? That's great.
Well, actually, I guess depending on how you count it, it looks like five games.
Is it all one disc?
Yep. It's all in one disc. It's got a nice menu. You know, you bring it up on the Xbox and you can choose between the games, and obviously it has, you know, saves and so forth. But
More expensive than any other single game for the Xbox.
Yeah. Well, you got to remember, I mean, you know, Half-Life 2 is now, I want to say, 3 years old.
Yeah. It's been
what's amazing about it, you know, we've been talking about Halo 3. You know, graphically speaking, this thing stands up really well. I mean, it actually exceeds, I would say. And they've made some improvements for it on the 360. I've only noticed a few small things, but there are liquid effects, and you know, you look through glass and it has kind of a cool translucency effect. Clearly, they've done some things with the graphics, but it always looked great. I mean, I ran Halo 2 on my PC. I'm sorry, Half-Life 2 on my PC at, I'm sure, 1920 by whatever, 1200.
Right.
You know, and it's not that resolution. I think I'm pretty sure it's 720p on the 360, but it is
it looks
really
good. Yeah.
And
it's still the scariest game ever,
and it's still really atmospheric and really fun, and I still feel that this is the best game ever made. It's just fantastic.
Really the best game ever made.
It's not it's a shooter. You walk around and you shoot things, but there are puzzles. There is an amazingly immersive world. And you know, like so many games now, you kind of learn what's going on in this world as you arrive in it, and you learn things over time.
It's like BioShock in that sense.
Yeah, you really buy into this world. It seems like a real place.
Yeah.
The people seem like real people, and it's amazing. It's really neat.
Yeah. Good pick, Orange Box. I'm going to buy it.
I love it.
I'm going to buy it, and it's the Team Fortress. You know, these are all based on the Halo engine, so it's really, you know, it's all Halo 2 stuff, really.
You Half-Life.
I mean, so what did I say? Half-Life. I say that all the time. Halo 2.
No, Half-Life. I did the same. It's impossible. Not
easy to confuse those. Well, they both start with H-A-L, so.
Yeah.
That's why. All right, there's our picks. There's our book pick. We had a lot of news this week. I hope we didn't bore you, but there was a lot to catch up. Next week or in the week after, we'd like to get Ed Bott on, I think.
Yeah, I got to talk to him about that. I meant to have him on this week, but of course that would have been bad timing.
Yeah, we had so much that we wouldn't have had time for an interview.
He has written up an amazing series of articles that debunk those Vista Digital, digital rights management issues that you may have heard about. And I'd love to have him talk about that stuff because it's fascinating. And he's done such a great job. Very, very thorough going through all that stuff. And,
If you wanted to, I don't know if you'd do it. We could get both guys on.
I don't think that's going to work because one of the things he told me was that they wanted to debate him.
Oh.
But the format was so.
Well, he is in Australia or New Zealand, so.
Yeah,
we've had him on Security Now. We talked to him, and then Steve did kind of a rebuttal, but I think Ed's done the most thorough rebuttal ever.
Well, what it mostly boils down to is that this guy is sort of working off a theory. He never has actually used any of this stuff, and the way these things work in the real world does not match up, with what he said. So,
I should point this out that. Now that we've all had a chance to sit on Vista for a year, none of this awful stuff has materialized. So
that's true. I mean, there are limitations in here. There is a secure path that needs to be followed within the machine to get, HD content from one end to the other. Right. We saw that with the HD DVD drive.
Right.
It's not particularly onerous and it's not.
You were able to work your way around it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think the problem is there are a lot of myths about how Vista is going to degrade the quality of video when you play it back, and there's a lot of kind of baloney out there, and I think this is a fascinating topic, and hopefully he can do that soon because I'd really like to have him on here.
Well, Ed's an old friend; he used to be on the radio show regularly when I did it with Dvorak, and I haven't seen him in ages, so I would very much like to get him on. So please give him my regards and tell him. Come on the show, Ed.
Well, he agreed to do it. Good. So I think this week would have been a mistake. I actually just forgot anyway, but we obviously had so much to talk about.
You didn't forget. But, you knew internally. Internally, you knew.
I've been a little off my game ever since the Halo thing. So
that's a sign of age, Paul. You can't pull the all-nighters like you used to. Yeah,
it's tough being old.
You're not that old. All right, hey, it's great to talk to you. I'm glad you're back. And I know that we have a lot of listeners who were really going through withdrawal, missed their Windows Weekly. So,
oh my God, I'm sorry to delay this even further, but I ran into a guy. We were going through security at the airport in Phoenix.
Yeah,
and. The guy had looking at my license and he looked at my ticket. I looked at my license and he looked at my ticket and I thought, wow, this is taking a long time. And I'm kind of doing that thing. I'm looking at my watch. Like,
yeah.
He says, so you've been taking off some time from your podcast, huh? And my wife said, this is only the fourth or fifth time I've ever seen you blush.
Oh,
I felt like such a tool.
Paul. That's wonderful. No, I get that a lot. I get that a lot. It's funny.
Well, of course you do. I mean, you're famous.
But in the TSA, there's a lot of nerds.
I was really shocked. I mean, you go visit Microsoft. You're at a trade show or something. You run into people.
That's different, right?
That's fine. Expect this. But like out in the real world with my family, it was just like
good.
Okay,
you're so famous, Paul.
I felt no. That's
the
not
world
the point.
Famous.
It was just. But it was funny because it was funny not just because he recognized the name, but because he knew like we had been off.
See, I'm telling you.
And here I am in Phoenix. I'm like lounging around Phoenix for 5 days. And
see, you can't do that anymore.
And he called me on it.
He called you. You were busted, dude.
So I felt
And did he give you a strip search after that too? Or
no? Yes, he did. Yeah. It got awkward after that.
You got any liquids, Therat? I know you got some liquids in there.
Exactly.
Hey, thanks for being here, Paul. Thank you, everybody, for putting up with a couple of weeks off. We are back. We'll be back again next week, and we should have a very interesting show with Ed Bott. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll see you next time. The Windows Weekly.